My name is Manju Ali, and I'm just going to introduce my God sisters today. I was initiated by Srila Prabhupada in Los Angeles in 1972. And my God sister, Ilavati and Mandakini came together to Buri Place in 1969. And our dear God sister, Rangani, she joined in, or she was initiated in Paris at the installation of Radha's Parisishwar in 1973. So we come here, we're not all public speakers, but we come here to share our love of Srila Prabhupada and how he transformed our life and the life of the whole world, really, by bringing Krishna consciousness. So I will begin, and we'll just, we're going to be speaking together, and we'll share our stories. I was asked to go first, and you probably, I've spoken before, so you've probably heard my Prabhupada stories, but anyway, I'll just recap on them and share them with you. The first, it's, I thank Shruti Rupa. I wrote to him, and I said, Prabhu, if there's any service that we can do while we're at the manor, please engage us. And of course, it's totally out of our comfort zone to sit up here. But Srila Prabhupada, we really feel, though we're not public speakers, we really feel the importance of sharing Srila Prabhupada's legacy and how he personally, through his kindness, affection, and wisdom, changed our lives. And actually, and so it's our duty, really, for future generations to share these stories. In 20 years, most of us will be gone, and the next generation will be carrying the baton and carrying the flag of Mahaprabhu to, you know, for future generations. So to make, so I met Srila Prabhupada first in Los Angeles. I came at the end of 1971. Dina Bandhu and Akuti brought me to L.A. I was traveling and visiting different temples around America, first Chicago in 1970-71. And I was traveling, and I was looking for a spiritual master. I was looking for a purpose in life, a reason for this incarnation. I was disillusioned with, just disillusioned with the way the world was, and I really wanted to do something that I felt was valuable, and I wanted to teach her. So I traveled and studied and looked in many directions. And going to the Krishna temple the first time, it was a little out of the box, and I actually, by hearing Srila Prabhupada's voice on... they always played, you know, the Radha Krishna Temple album and Prabhupada singing in the kitchen. Prabhupada singing and Prabhupada's voice, there was something very mystical and capturing of his voice. And I just felt drawn to Srila Prabhupada. And in, so I traveled, and I used to visit temples, do some service and move on, because I wasn't actually ready to join. But when I went to Santa Barbara, Dina Bantu and Akuti said, Srila Prabhupada's coming to New Dwarka. New Dwarka was the biggest temple in 1972 in ISKCON. It had 75 devotees. And it was, you know, very opulent, apparently. And actually it was. And So they brought us there, and then Prabhupada actually wasn't coming for a few months, so I was engaged in the sewing for Krishna, which was really lovely. And then Prabhupada was coming, and it was probably March or April 72. I came at just the beginning, the end of December 71, and it was like God was coming, Krishna was coming. When Srila Prabhupada was coming, it was just like the whole temple was just in a spin. And there was a tangible tingling in the atmosphere. Everybody was running around, and just it was like everything had to be perfect, you know. And we were just you know, washing the steps and washing the floors and painting the rooms and just making it just all special, because we knew that a very special soul was coming. And when Prabhupada came, I was in the temple room, and so they were, and he came, and it was many, many devotees. And I remember I just hit the floor. Prabhupada's coming, and we hit the floor. And my first vision of Srila Prabhupada was his feet. He was walking in, and I was just on the floor, and I just saw these golden feet. And it might sound sentimental, but it was actually, those feet changed my life. And I remember just walking, and I remember just looking, and then I kind of looked to the side, you know, and I just looked at Prabhupada up from his feet, and it was Jai Shri Shri Radha Gokulananda. So looking at Srila Prabhupada from the floor up, Prabhupada. Jai Shri Shri Radha Gokulananda Sitaram Hanuman Lakshman Gaurani Tai Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai. And I still have that picture, that photograph of my mind of that first moment of seeing my spiritual master and seeing the effulgence of his feet as he walked and looking up and just seeing, and he was like a noble giant. Because from the floor looking up, and he walked with so much dignity and purpose and grace. And then he went and took darshan of Rukmini Dwarkadish and all the deities. And then he went to sit on his Vyasasana, and he had his gong. And in Los Angeles, he liked to play his gong. And he just led the kirtan. And then he gave a class. And that was my first experience, and I knew there was something special here. I didn't leave after that. I stayed, you know. I didn't wander onto another temple. I was captured. And so that is one story. And then a few months later, about 3 months later, I was initiated. And in those days, you didn't have to wait 2 years and jump through lots of hoops. It was early days, and if we had a little bit of eagerness, then he brought us closer and engaged us. So that was my first story of Srila Prabhupada. And I'll just tell one more story, and then we'll pass on to Ilavati. Ranjini, do you want to tell a story now? Yeah. Shall I do one more? Yeah.
Do one more.
Shall I do one more? You've probably all heard this story, but this was a funny story. Srila Prabhupada was showing his fatherly humor. And in those days, we had arranged marriages. And I was asked to get married to Jayatirtha Prabhu. And I was given 24 hours to decide if I would step up to the mark and have a fire sacrifice in 7 days. So I was asked, and I thought, oh gosh, who are they going to marry off to? And it was Jayatirtha, and he was the temple president at that time in Los Angeles, so I had never spoke to him except for what color are the deities wearing tomorrow. So there was no communication at all. And anyway, that night I went to the Brahmacharini Ashram, and in those days there were many devotees in Los Angeles, and there were 23 of us Brahmacharinis in one room. And it wasn't such a big room, so it was wall-to-wall sleeping bags. But I remember sitting on my sleeping bag all night and really praying to Srila Prabhupada, you know, that this was like a really big decision, and, you know, I had 24 hours. And I sat and I prayed and I asked Srila Prabhupada, you know, what he wanted of me, because I had come to him. And I didn't come looking for a husband. I came looking for a purpose in my life to serve God. And I just got a real clarity in sitting all night and just praying that actually it would be good for my spiritual life if I learned to surrender. And if I just took the invitation as Srila Prabhupada's grace. And so the next morning I said, okay, I'll get married. Okay, and 7 days. 7 days I had to make a kurta, never made a kurta before, a bead bag, and cook a feast for the temple. And I was Brahmin by then. It was 72 October. And so anyway, Nandarani, wonderful Nandarani, my god sister, and Dayananda, they were good friends, and they helped. She helped me with the kurta and all this. Anyway, I rang up my mother and I said, Mom, I'm getting married on Saturday. And my mother said, can I come? You know, we were just so absorbed in just in the temple that, you know, our material lives were, you know, kind of on hold almost. So we just didn't. I would speak to my mom from time to time, but it wasn't like, and I said, of course you can come. And so I went and found a flight from Chicago to Los Angeles and booked a motel, and my mother came. Anyway, the wedding happened in 7 days, and this is the Prabhupada bit. We had a fire sacrifice in the garden of Nandarani and Dayananda's house. And we did the fire sacrifice, and then we were invited to see Srila Prabhupada in the garden. And this wedding wasn't in the temple because some devotees weren't following their vows as well as Prabhupada had expected we should. And they were getting married in front of the deities and then not staying in their relationships. So Prabhupada said we should get married in the garden and then come and have a blessing at the temple. And our blessing was Srila Prabhupada. We went into the garden. At that time, Srila Prabhupada was giving classes on how a beautiful wife is an enemy to the husband. And this was about that actually in marriage, the woman is a chaste, and if she's too beautiful, the husband will love her more than Krishna. And that actually a beautiful wife could be an impediment in one's devotional life. Anyway, that's the prelude. So we come to the garden. My mother had given me money to buy a pink sari. So I come in tied to my husband. And I had a plate of prasadam for Srila Prabhupada. We brought a plate on his plates of the feast, and we just entered into the garden. Srila Prabhupada was in the garden, and we just entered in through the archway there. And Prabhupada looked up at me, and he had a very cheeky smile. And he looked up at me, and he said, and then he looked at Jaitirtha, then he looked back at me, then he said, oh, she is beautiful. And I thought, oh my God, I'm an enemy already. I just like went bright red, you know, of course, and matched my sari. And then Srila Prabhupada just looked at me so affectionately like a father. And he just winked, you know, he just kind of winked and he smiled, you know. And it was just his humor and his affection that actually captured us. And then he said, and then I brought him the plate, and then he had the plate put down and he took the drink. And you know how Srila Prabhupada, you see from the films, or some of you who have personally met him, Prabhupada picked up the cup and just put the cup back, you know, with his little finger in the air and took it without touching the cup to his mouth. And then he savored. And then he took another. And then he savored. And then he looked at Jaitirtha. She can cook? And it was just like, I was okay then, you know, I could cook. Anyway, and then Srila Prabhupada had us sit right by him, right at his feet, and he came and sat. And my mom didn't come into the garden, but it was okay. And the first thing Srila Prabhupada said to me is, "What about your parents? What do they think of Krishna consciousness?" And then I told him my mother had come to the wedding, and my mother had given us a gift of $50. Or $100, I think it was. $100 was my wedding gift. And I gave the check to Srila Prabhupada of my money that my mother had given as our wedding present. And Srila Prabhupada then asked about, he spoke about our relationship with our parents and how we had to, really honor our parents. And I looked at Srila Prabhupada and I really saw he was my parent as well. And just a little, and my mother, in America, when you write a check, you get the check back. It's a signed check. Srila Prabhupada signed the back of the check when he put it into the bank. And I have that check with Srila Prabhupada's signature that was given to me on my wedding day. And so Prabhupada touched that. And it's still with me as one of the treasures of that moment in time and that grace that I received from Srila Prabhupada. So I think that's enough for me now. But thank you for listening. Okay.
Hare Krishna. I'm sorry in advance for the English mistakes that might not be very understandable sometimes. I also have a story with my mother, and I think it's very joyful to see one of our parents who doesn't have any connection with Krishna consciousness to be able to do some service. And on the day of the installation of Radha Parisishwara, my mother happened to visit me hiding from my father. She was doing that from time to time. And of course everybody was running around, nothing was ready, the Vyasa San, the curtains. And my mother used to be a seamstress. Nobody knew, but somebody came up to her and asked if she could sew the seam of the curtains. And she said, "Oh, of course." So here she is, she sewed all the seams of the curtains in the temple room, and she loved prasadam. So it made me really happy because I thought maybe she won't have any more contact with Krishna consciousness, but at least she starts her path, who knows? I mean, that's how I felt it. And on that day, I felt really, really glad. So, I was going to say something about my initiation. We were many devotees that day, I can't remember how many, but Prabhupada, maybe you had that experience that we get our initiation name and we don't really catch it the very first time. Then afterwards we run all over to the secretary and we ask, "What's exactly my name? Do you know what it means?" And I was the only one among the girls that Prabhupada explained, and was another boy whose name is Indriya Damana Prabhu that was explained amongst the boys. So Srila Prabhupada said, "Your name is Ragini, means the best singer." And then everybody burst into laugh. Because everybody knows what a bad singer I am. I actually, during a kirtan, I kind of utter for myself, because I don't want to disturb the voices around me, because everybody will go like this. So it was funny. Then another little story, because already in 72, 73, in the French Yatra, we didn't have so much association with Srila Prabhupada. Was only the leaders, and we were really not very close. And so I was given the duty to, with another god sister, to clean Prabhupada's room while he was giving class in the morning, which was a big sacrifice, but was also nice to clean his room. And one day, I don't know what happened, but Srila Prabhupada came up a few minutes before the time was supposed to be, because usually it was, hurry up, pick up everything, Prabhupada's coming up, he's coming up. And we were trying to, you know, grab all the cleaning stuff. But that day nobody said anything, so I didn't know I was there, you know, doing the last things, and is that clean? And suddenly I hear some noise at the entrance, at the door, and I turn back, and here was Srila Prabhupada. And for us it was so, this tiny but great little person that was so effulgent, was a shock, you know. We were not used to see him face to face. And I just was like, ah, what do I do now, you know, except falling on the floor? And then what? I just try to escape. It's not polite. I mean, what to do? So I give my obeisances. I get back up and I try to utter something like, please, Srila Prabhupada, excuse me, let me gather the few things left. But he was just looking at me, and he sat at his desk. And then he said something, but I wasn't sure that I understood, because his accent for a French girl, British and Indian accent, was a little difficult for me. Excuse me, was speaking more American English, if I can say so. So I wasn't sure I understood. He said, actually, he asked me what was my service. Took me a few seconds. And then I thought, maybe he's asking me what's my service. What are you doing can mean in a nice way. It's not what are you doing in my room, you know, at that time. It was, what are you doing? So I told him that I was in the press department and that I was translating his books. So maybe you can imagine what Prabhupada did. He just went like this and he said, thank you very much. And for me it was like, I wasn't sure he was talking to me, you know. It was just like, you know. So actually that's the only real remembrance, really strange remembrance I have from Srila Prabhupada. Because when I got my Gayatri, I was supposed also to get him from him directly, but finally Bhagavan Das gave it to us. So that's all my strange remembrances. That's all. I'm so sorry. I would love to say more. Hare Krishna. My friend has a lot to say. She's one of the first wonderful devotees who preached. She preaches all over the world. She's an incredible person. She saved me. Yeah, she saved me. She's my link. One.
Yesterday, can you hear? Yesterday, we spent a little time with Rananath Maharaj. And we talked for quite a while, you know, about this devotee in relationship to Prabhupada, and about how the movement got started, and you know, it went on for quite a while. And then he said, you know, we have a little tradition, so please tell us, what's your first memory of Srila Prabhupada? So we sort of went along, and the only thing I could say is, doesn't really amount to very much, and that's just what happened to me. I met Srila Prabhupada for the first time. I had already been in the movement for about 2 years. Not quite, but nearly 2 years. And it was at the occasion of the San Francisco Ratsa Yatra in 1971. So I saw Prabhupada get out of his room into the car. Then everybody rushed. Then Prabhupada got out of his car onto the cart. Then we pulled the cart through the gardens. Then Prabhupada got down from the cart, back into the car, back to the temple, back to his room, and off he went. And that was my first meeting with Srila Prabhupada. So, if you go up into the years, more of the same thing happened. And I came to Paris in 1972, and Prabhupada was visiting Paris at that time. So we had a couple of classes at the, well, what you may call a temple, which was just like a family house, you know. And of course, I would never have gotten any mercy at all if it had not been for that one there. I mean, that one there, the one that refuses to speak to you for some strange reason. She has been always the one person that sort of pushes me gently. And so she managed that I, you know, I got into Prabhupada's quarters, and then there was a big event in art school in Paris, and I was there, and I listened to the whole class, and Prabhupada never spent very much time in France, you know. He, before I knew it, he was gone again. Then I went back to San Francisco, where I lived at that point, and my husband told me, well, you know, I decided that we should go down to Los Angeles. Of course, by that time, we had sort of been estranged from temple life, you know. So we managed to get to Los Angeles. And of course, I mean, you know, it's like, even just out of mere habit, we take a room not far from the temple and from the devotees. And of course, for the Sunday, we go to the temple for the feast. And somebody comes to us and says, you know, Prabhupada is coming tomorrow. And it was like, huh, we never expected that. And at that point, Prabhupada spent quite a bit of time. It was just about the time Manjawali was talking about, you know. Mm-hmm. And Prabhupada spent a whole lot of time in Los Angeles. He would go to Vrindavan, India, come back to Los Angeles, go to a temple in America, come back to Los Angeles. And we had classes. We had the darshan in the little garden Manjawali was talking about. The morning walks for the very VIP devotees. And I remember the first morning walk that Prabhupada took after he came. So we were there when the car was going to be leaving. So Prabhupada got in the car and he went. Then he came back and I was there with my husband, who, as you might expect, had, and in those days it was not the rule, but he had full hair. And Prabhupada just looked at him, you know, like, what are you doing there in that condition, you know? So the next day, we were again there at the right spot at the right time, and my husband had a beautiful sikha. So then, you know, the same thing happened. I went back to Paris, and Prabhupada came to Paris for a very short time. And at that point, a big event was organized in Paris in a concert hall called Salle Pleyel. And all the devotees were busy day and night, practically putting posters all over the city. I mean, no discrimination. Anybody would be able to walk would be on the street by two, one holding a bucket with the glue and a brush, and the other one holding the posters. And we put them everywhere, especially where it was forbidden to post anything, you know. And believe it or not, but years and years later, sometime you'd find a poster. And I don't know if you know anything about France, but France, you probably know about the French Revolution, you know, in 1789. I mean, we even killed the king and all, you know, that's pretty. And that's really what French mentality is resting on. It may be very much unconscious, but, you know, there is a revolutionary sleeping in the heart of every Frenchman. So, Prabhupada came, he had a beautiful Vyasasana. Wrought iron, round back, beautiful silk and golden fabric. And our friend Jyotirmayi was doing the translating, and there was a big kirtan, and Prabhupada talked, and Jyotirmayi translated into French, and then there was question time. And of course, then you are going to understand why I said that about the French Revolution. Somebody stood up in the crowd and said, "Hey, get down from that seat. Who do you think you are?" So, I mean, I don't exactly remember how the devotees handled that, but everything quieted down. But later on, Prabhupada commented, "When you take me on an engagement, don't take my Vyasasana anymore." Because he wanted to be heard. He did not want to be challenged on such grounds. Because when you are challenged on these kinds of grounds, there is no answer to be given whatsoever, you know. So Prabhupada was willing to do that. And then another time Prabhupada came. He came to New Mayapur, country ashram. And there again, he did not spend so much time. And so we had the classes and all, you know. And that was probably 1976. And then we got, my husband and I got the opportunity to go to India. Of course, for us, India meant Vrindavan. So then again, we get there, we pass the gate, and somebody comes to us and says, you know, Prabhupada is in Delhi right now, and he's going to be coming tomorrow. And Prabhupada, again, spent a whole bunch of time in Vrindavan. And again, it was like classes every morning, darshan in the evening. And I'd get up in the morning before Mangala Aarti, and I would be chanting my round, doing parikrama around the temple. And Prabhupada's quarters, the windows, were just above the parikrama, right in the back of the deities. If I remember well, I mean, if I'm mistaken, please, you know, correct me, but that's the way I remember. And I would hear Prabhupada translating the books and dictating in his machine as I was walking, just, you know, at those odd hours. And that's about, you know, what I can say about the physical presence of Srila Prabhupada. And actually, this is quite unfair to tell stories like that, because so many words, it raises some emotions, but it's all outside, you know. Like if I was to tell you, what do you see? So you'd look around you and you'd see, you know, this devotee, the ground, the light fixtures, the mic, and so. But there is one thing that we always forget, is I am doing the seeing. So actually, when I should be talking about Prabhupada, I should be talking about what Prabhupada's impact had in my life. And this did not come through meeting Srila Prabhupada so much as it did from studying the books. And I had the same experience as Ragini. When I first got to London, I could barely understand a word of what Prabhupada said. First of all, I hardly spoke any English at all, just high school English, taught by people who did not know anything about teaching foreign language, you know. So I could barely understand anything. So most of what I really, the impact of that Prabhupada in my life came through two media, the books and the devotees. That's it. That's the only thing. And so to go back to the very, very beginning, I, Mandakini, the one who refuses to speak,
sorry, my dear Prabhus, I don't refuse to speak, but I was really eager for our dear God sisters, and Manjali and I were really eager for you to hear them, because that's the first time they come to speak in Bhaktivedanta manner.
It's the very first time I visit Bhaktivedanta Manor, and it's incredible.
So I, Mandakini, and another friend of ours, Jyotirmayi, we went to high school together. And we dropped out of high school together. So anyway, after wasting a few months doing just about anything and everything that came to our mind, we decided, it was the late 60s. Everybody had a guru. The Beatles had a guru, So we were going to find a guru. So, where do you go to find a guru? Well, according to all the books that we had, you had to go east. So we were going to go to India. Now that I realize that, I say, it's a good thing we never got to India, because what would we have done there? How do you go about, do you put an ad in the paper? French girls, no training whatsoever, looking for bona fide guru. I don't even think we would have had even a concept of what bona fide meant, So anyway, I believe that somehow or other we must have had even just a shade of sincere desire, because before we knew it, the guru happened on us through his disciples. And so very, very quickly, that must have been like in late August or beginning of September 1969, and the devotees had gotten to Paris just a few weeks before that. It came up very, very quickly. And there was no temple whatsoever. They were setting up a temporary temple room in the bar of the American Center for Student Artists. So they would get there, make a big altar with posters, put posters all over, and then they would have kirtan and talk on Bhagavad Gita. And of course, one time, Umapati Das Brahmachari had a creative idea. Instead of doing as he usually did, took a verse from Bhagavad Gita and spoke on it, he went to the Krishna book and gave a summary of Krishna as Damodar. And I remember very well, Krishna did some nonsense, so Mother Yasoda decided to bind him. But the rope was just too short, just a little bit too short. So, of course, she goes, gets a rope, ties the second rope to the first rope, and the rope is too short. On and on until she, wears herself out, And to me, that was like the most meaningful story that I could have heard at that point, because everybody knew that the absolute truth is impersonal. And I was really shocked when I was told that the absolute truth is a person. I mean, how shocking. And there it was, the proof that the absolute truth may be a person, but it's not a person like you and me. So it gave me such a sense of relief, you know. And then the devotees started talking about Prabhupada going to London. And I'm a very slow mover. So, of course, my two friends, Mandakini and Jyotirmayi, they sort of managed to get to London. And then Jyotirmayi came back to France and she said, you know, you really should be involved with the devotees. You know, it's like... So she sort of drags me to a couple of engagements that the Paris devotees had arranged, and then she goes back and I go back into my routine, you know. And some weeks after, Mandakini comes to my door and she knocks and I open up the door. The first thing she says is, you have to come to London with me. And right in the same breath, she says, you know, we are making flower garlands. I have no idea what flower garlands were, but I felt in my heart, there is nothing in the world that I want to do more than making flower garlands, you know. So, but then I was all entangled. So, my mother pushed me. She said, you know, if you don't go to the London temple, you will regret it all your life. So I went. And then, as I said, you know, Prabhupada had gone by the time I got to London. So, in those days, things were quite different. I mean, we were rubbing shoulders with wonderful, great devotees that had been personally taken care of by Srila Prabhupada. They were so enthusiastic. And they had such confidence in the process and in the people, because they had seen so many people's lives being completely turned over by the chanting, by joining the movement, that before I knew it, I was asked, you want to get initiated? Oh gosh, I mean, it's like... And then I thought, oh, you know, the two others, they are getting initiated. So then I said, oh, if they get initiated and I don't, that's going to be the end of our friendship, so maybe I should get initiated. So I said, yes, I'll get initiated. And then I thought, oh, what did I do? Then Yamuna came around and she said, you know, the way we do it is through the mail. So we put your beads in a package and Prabhupada would get the beads and chant on each one. And he'll send them back with a letter that will give you your new name. But when we send your beads, you have to make a little present for Srila Prabhupada. So I don't remember what Mandakini and Jyotirmayi did, but I knew a little bit of sewing. So Yamuna instructed me to make a little kerchief for Prabhupada's own deity's arti. and that was sent. And sometime later, I mean, we were sort of expecting the mail every day, you know, and they came back. And so we opened up the letters, and Jyotirmayi's name, Joël, legal name, was transformed into Jyotirmayi. And we all thought it was brilliant because she was really attracted to the glow of the Absolute Truth. And then Monique, her name was turned into Mandakini, which is, Prabhupada said, this is the river Ganges coming from the heavenly planets, you know. So we thought it was just, you know, it fit the bill perfectly. And then my name was Evelyn, and Prabhupada said, your new name is Ilavati. And then he said, before being known as Bharadvasha, the planet Earth was known as Ilavativasha. And this is when I want to tell you about the devotees. Because when we read that, Yamuna was with us. And in that point, in the Buri Place temple, Yamuna was the Pujari, the sole Pujari. So she'd go behind the curtain, bathe and dress the deities while we were having Bhagavad Gita class. And we all, at that point, there was nothing but that really tiny purple cover Bhagavad Gita. No Sanskrit, very short purport, you know. And we all sat and we just read one verse and purport one after another. And sometime somebody who knew something about Krishna consciousness would, you know, volunteer, you know, some specific realization or whatever. And Yamuna was in the back, bathing the deities and all that. So when she came and we opened the letters and she heard my name, she said, you know, we just read that verse this morning during Bhagavad Gita class. None of us remembered, but she did. You know, that's what you mean when you say, you know, most of the attachment, the very deep attachment I have for Srila Prabhupada, who has completely given shape to the adult I became, is through the books and through the devotees. There is some, at one point I had made a book, and I would write down specific quotes that I really liked, but they were not just written one after another. I had some categories, you know. And one that I really was fond of was all the little stories that Prabhupada, you know, spread throughout all his purports and talks and all, you know. And one of my favorite ones. I mean, it still to this day, practically there is not one day when I don't have to repeat myself that story. And I find it so useful. I mean, it makes me such a strong, maybe not a strong devotee, but a strong thinker, is that story. You know, in India there is always controversies about who has knowledge and who has no knowledge. And the story goes, people who speak a lot, they don't know anything. People who know, that is the truth, don't say anything. And in order to make their point, they go saying, you take a jug, it's empty. You beat the jug, and it makes a lot of sound. You take the same jug, you fill it with water, and you beat the jug, and you won't hear a thing. So this is the proof. He who speaks doesn't know, he who doesn't speak know. And you know what Prabhupada's bright answer to that? Does anybody know? Yeah, what do I have to do with a jug? Yeah. And what? I mean, I use that story over and over again because it's beautiful about what is proper discrimination. You cannot just compare anything and everything, or liken anything to anything, or bunch up in odd categories anything with everything else, you know. So this is something that I find very, very useful. Another beautiful story I really like. I mean, I might not know, remember all the details, but in India, there is like a series of little stories that present the different adventures of a foolish farmer. And so that farmer, I mean, I guess he must have been young at that point, was told by his mother, please go to town and get ghee. But because he is foolish, he had to ask, Mom or Mata, what is ghee? And the mother says, oh, it's some fat. It's liquid, and you cook things in it. So he remembers it's liquid, and you cook things in it. Okay, so he goes to town, and he goes to the first merchant, and he says, I would want to buy ghee. And the merchant says, oh, ghee. How much money you have? So he gives him his money. He says, but you know, I have something better than ghee. Oh, so I want this. I mean, you just need to say better, you know. Oh, I want this. So he gets him some oil. It's, you know, it's clearer than ghee. So it's better than ghee. So he's all happy, and he goes away with the oil, and then he say, somebody else says, oh, come on, come on, what do you want? What do you need? I see that you have some oil, but you know, I have something better than oil. It's completely clear. Well, can you cook something? Oh, yeah, people cook everything in that all the time. It's perfect for cooking. And he gives him a pot of water. So, I mean, to me, it's like trying to be purer than the pure. You wind up having nothing at all, you know. So that, again, I really try, you know, to distinguish, you know, what to do, what to say, what attitude to have in that or that situation according to that, you know. How can I be more efficient in a Krishna conscious fashion? And there was something else I wanted to tell you. I told you about the first initiation, but there was to be a second initiation. And again, it was at that particular time when Prabhupada had gotten sick again, so he could not really travel. So Yamuna had written to Prabhupada saying, you know, Prabhupada, I'm feeling a little bit overburdened. I'm taking care of the deities all by myself. It would be wonderful if I could, you know, like this nice devotee is a Brahmana, but he is in charge of the kitchen. This other devotee is a Brahmana, but, you know, he has other service. It would be really nice if we could have a few more Brahmanas, you know. So Prabhupada answered, yeah, I know. You're not the only one that's thinking in that way. And I'm trying to think of some way we could get this done. And I left London, and then I came back for the Rasa Yatra, and we had been given the news that Prabhupada had found a wonderful way to give people second initiation without his being physically present. The whole thing is to receive the Gayatri Mantra from the very lips of your spiritual master. So how can you listen to the Gayatri Mantra being spoken by your spiritual master if your spiritual master is not physically present? Well, it's very simple. Prabhupada recorded the Gayatri Mantra on a tape, and he would send it, and then people would receive the paper with the Gayatri Mantra written on it. And then, at the same time as they read it for the same time, they heard, you know, Prabhupada's voice say the Gayatri Mantra. I mean, when you hear about dovetailing things for Krishna consciousness and enhancing Krishna consciousness with things that you would not necessarily think about. I mean, this is, to me, it's like such a source of happiness when I hear that. Srila Prabhupada was really creative. And that's...
Thank you.
Namaham Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutili Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Tinamini Vanchakalpata Nubhyasha Kripa Sindhu Bhyavacha Patitanam Pavanibhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha. Hare Krishna, dear devotees, as always it's such a honor and a great joy for all of us to be amongst all of you. So
I'm just so happy that all my god sisters could speak in such an eloquent way, and they could really give you Srila Prabhupada's presence. So we just have 10 minutes, so I will just talk very shortly, but for the one of you who will be free tonight, I think we'll be talking a little more tonight in Srila Prabhupada's room. So to come back to what Ilavati Prabhu was saying, we were just young girls before we met Srila Prabhupada, about 19 years old or so, and very eager at that point of our life to find what was life for, what was the goal of human life. We became very disgusted with this life, and we didn't want to repeat the pattern of life our parents were showing us. It seemed useless. And if you speak French, there is an expression saying métro, boulot, dodo, meaning the tube, the work, and the going back to sleep. So we thought life, as most people were living, was not meant for that purpose. And we became very eager to find someone who could tell us what was life about. At that point, Ilavati was working. You were working at this point. And Jyotirmayi and I, after dropping from high school, we went back to one school to take some courses called Sorbonne. And it was ethnology. So we hoped to find some answer from the ancient tribes or ancient traditions to know what was the goal of life. After some time, we decided, as my dear friend mentioned, that we were going to go to India to try to find a spiritual master. And by doing so, we did a little student job. It was to distribute publicity leaflets in the mailboxes of people. And at that point, we were looking at our book about impersonal philosophy all the time. And one colleague, we were in a van, came to us and told us, "I see you are interested in spiritual life." And we told him, "Actually, we are living for spiritual life." And we just noticed he had a little bunch of hair at the back. And he said, "Oh, actually, I have a spiritual master. His name is A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada." And we told him, "Actually, we are looking for a spiritual master." And it went on. He told us about the Maha Mantra. And we couldn't stop reciting during the day the Maha Mantra. And the last thing was, there is a scripture, the Srimad Bhagavatam. If you just read a verse, you will not take birth again in this material world. You will get liberation. And being convinced Mayavadi, we told him, "Oh, liberation, that's the goal of our life." So after we could go on and on, but after some time, the devotee invited us to come to the American Center. And I remember that first, Ilavati, I don't know if you were with us that first time, maybe not the first time. It was only Jyotirmayi and I. And to my great shame, to my great shame, I have to say it was the 60s at the time, and we you know, a lot of LSD and drugs were going on. So we decided to know if the devotees are really truthful, if they are true spiritual practitioners. We, for the first time, we are going to try that substance, that LSD. So we will know for sure. We thought it was opening our mind at the time. So we are going to take that substance, and we will know for sure if they are true practitioners. So we came a little bit funny, you know. And the kirtan was actually, the kirtan was going on. And it was absolutely gorgeous, beautiful. We felt very, very attracted to the kirtan. But then Umapatidas Brahmachari began to give a class. And he started talking about the absolute truth. But the problem was, his words were as follows. Actually, God, the absolute truth, is a little blue village boy. And he's giving butter to the monkeys. So I looked at my friend, Jyotirmayi. I said, oh, it's not for us. It's not for us. Then time came for Prashadam. And we were quite strict, even macrobiotic, a little bit, no sugar. So they gave us very, very nicely some gulab jamun. So we took the gulab jamun and all this sweetness and the juice. But we were very, very polite. But as Ilavati said, the devotees were absolutely so caring, so nice, that although the philosophy was giving a lot of problems to us because of this Mayavadi and impersonalism, we couldn't stop meeting the devotees. Ilavati actually invited them to come to her house. And the mom was cooking, and because the devotees were sleeping under the bridges or in the tube station. And at one point, one devotee said, "Why don't you come to London? Our spiritual master will be there. And he's going to install some deities, and especially to open a temple in London." So the word temples really struck our mind, because it sounded very mystical, a temple, a spiritual master. So we decided, because we were not working at the time, we decided we'll go there and we will try to meet your spiritual master, Sri Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. And we were so foolish, and Sri Prabhupada really tricked us, but our goal in going to London was to test Sri Prabhupada, to see if he was our real spiritual master. So now it's about, oh, okay, we have 5 more minutes. So I will just go back to what Ilavati said. You know, when you first met Srila Prabhupada, we discussed it yesterday with Radhanath Maharaj. So we came to the temple, and already the time, the devotee girls prepared us, putting a sari on us and putting our hair correctly, because for them we looked like Maya Devi. being a nice young French girls, you know. So we were ready to go in the temple. The installation of Sri Sri Radha Nandanishvara was over. That beautiful installation, as you have read or you have heard. Then a nice kirtan was going on in the temple. So we sat down, and we did like everybody else. We didn't want to, you know, we wanted to be very polite and respectful. And all of a sudden, that was the very place temple you have seen pictures or you have seen videos. The atmosphere was very mystical. If I remember correctly, the carpet was kind of dark purple. Yeah, it was very long, quite narrow, and the deities were at the back of the temple, like that, and opposite to the street, actually. And there was a big Vyasasan, kind of a little funny. It was on the left side of the deities. So all of a sudden, the kirtan stopped, and everybody was bowing down. So we never bowed down in our life, but we did like everybody else. And coming back to Dear Manjali Prabhu, I had a bit the same experience. I was very curious. Sher Prabhupada says it's a lady's defect. And I kind of looked up, and I saw two beautiful golden feet passing by. He just dropped, actually, his slippers near the entrance of the Buri Place temple. And these beautiful golden feet were amazing, and they looked tender and gold. But I couldn't stop there. I kept up looking. And then for the first time, I saw the physical presence of Srila Prabhupada. And what I told yesterday, and maybe I told you before, it always come back to my mind. He was looking like the emperor of the world. Very, very aristocratic and dignified, and a most extraordinary personality. And at the same time, he was looking so humble. And I was so shocked because I never, this is kind of an antinomic qualities. I never saw these two qualities in one person. So I started for the first time wondering, oh, maybe he's our spiritual master. Let us test him. Let us hear him. And we only had 7 days because Prabhupada, after the installation, was going to leave England. His task was done in England, and he was going to go somewhere else to give his association. And so we had 1 week to try to see if he was our real spiritual master. So I will stop here because it's time. Yes, dear Prabhu. Oh, yeah, he was much better than Napoleon. And just to say that when Srila Prabhupada came to France or to any other country of the world, he used always to make a reference to the social or cultural side of the country. So there was an initiation in France in the garden, Jardin du Luxembourg. And he was praising Napoleon. He was saying that Napoleon was getting up really early, like kind of 4 o'clock or something. And then men who get up very early, they could do great things. Of course, Napoleon, for the French people, was very controversial. But, yeah, he was... there was no comparison with Napoleon. So, my dear Prabhus, I won't take more of your time. I will stop here. But thank you to Shuti Dharma Prabhu, to all of us, to welcome us so nicely, although we feel we are not deserving any of it. And we are very happy to see Srila Prabhupada's movement in wonderful hands. And all glories to your service.